You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We've got a fairly packed podcast this evening. Some, lots of news and bits and bobs to get through. And joining me to do that, we've got Johnny McGinty. Hello, Johnny.
Good evening. How are we doing?
And Craig Manson. Good evening, Craig.
Hello, Walt. How are we doing?
If you're watching us live now, we're on Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. Also, listen to the podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you can listen to your podcast as well. You don't have to watch, not to look at us as we do this. You can listen to us as well. You can also sign up for our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast. And for £3 a month, you get the normal podcast without any adverts in it whatsoever. You also get a bonus weekly episode as well, where we talk more generally about the world of rugby and maybe delve a little bit deeper into some of the issues we talk about on the main pod. So this week, let's start with the big news, Craig. How are Fife under 18s? What a win.
Fabulous. Yeah. Really interesting weekend. It was, first of all, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. We travelled up to Aberdeen to the Caledonia Cup finals and took on Aberdeen Wanderers. And I'll tell you one thing: Aberdeen Wanderers were a very strong team and had a very different game plan to ourselves. And they were very, very good, but we were very. We did very well. Our forwards worked very, very hard, and they made the difference. Not that their backs didn't do very well; they did a great job as well. But our forwards were very, very strong. So yeah, it was a great weekend. I'm getting a bit emotional about it. Actually, it was very good.
Well, we did. We had a Where's Dougie Donnelly from regular listener Alan McDonald, who said he spotted spotted Craig Manson in a How Cool Today at the Saltire Energy Caledonian Youth Rugby Cup Finals Day. Come on, Aberdeen.
I wish I'd known we were going to talk about this, because I'd have put actual real-world money on former tight head prop Craig Manson, whose sudden plays in the forwards for the under-18s, saying it was all the forwards.
It wasn't all the forwards. We've got some fantastic backs, and we really have. And also, what I will say is that there was a lot of the boys were finishing up. It was their last game for the How under-18s, because they move on now up to senior rugby. And also, we said goodbye to two fantastic coaches in Willie and Innes, who have left the team now. And it was quite an emotional day for everyone, so it was great.
It was a great way to cap it off, though.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
Good. Absolutely good stuff. Fantastic. Well, that's.
We should say, by the way, it wasn't just Craig. It was a clean sweep for us this weekend. Under 16s and under 15s won their cup finals as well.
Absolutely. And thank you for keeping me right there, Johnny, because I would have missed that. And I really I shouldn't, because I'm very proud of everyone. In fact, the under 16s that won, they're the ones that are coming up to join my group of under 17s who are going to be under 18s now. Hopefully we'll have a good season next season as well.
Is that with the future rugby star in the background there, Johnny?
Yeah, I know.
What's her hands in the ruck this week? The declining quality of rusks.
Probably the fact that she's not even started going to bed at 20 to 9.
Yeah, there you go. I lost my train of thought there. I was going to ask you, so is all the cup finals all in the same place then, Craig, or with the different?
Yeah, they were all in the same pitches. There was five pitches up at is it Shellex? Oh goodness, I've forgotten the name of the area.
The only reason I ask, I have fond memories of going to finals with all the age groups on the one bus. And I don't know if they did do that now anymore.
Well, we were set to do that, but because of the way it worked out, because we were in the Shield, we weren't actually in the Cup final. We dropped out of the Shield, and then the other two teams were in Cup finals. They were later. So, for example, our kickoff was 11, and then the other two were, I think it was 2:30 and then 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, we ended up all on three separate buses, of all things. No. So it was half and half because it was good to have all our lads together because especially with a lot of them finishing up moving on.
Yeah, I've got memories of going to some sort of finals day and. I think it was Hoik once with the under-18s on the bus, and I must have been under-14s at the time. And the things I saw then, you'd probably be subject to safeguard and investigation these days.
Speaking of which, how did your costume go down, Greg?
And my costume was fine. I didn't go as crazy as I was going to. Johnny and I met each other on Saturday at the House Evans, and the lads had decided that they were going to have a Hawaiian theme on the way home on the bus, and so I decided that I was going to join in along with, I think, Innes, also Innes Petrie, and he went a little bit further than I did because he had the hula skirt.
Coconut bra.
That was the thing we didn't do. The coconut bra didn't happen because I was going to go.
I don't know if that's, I don't know if like him being topless in a hula skirt is somehow even worse.
he had a Hawaiian shirt on and matching pair of Hawaiian shorts on. I was going to go full Maui, but I didn't. I was going to think it was going to be Moana was going to start happening, but it wasn't. No,
you should have said me and Cammy would have come and rapped.
Oh, exactly. He pretends he doesn't know the raft, Johnny.
Yeah, he gives us the like sad dad face whenever we start doing it, but he clearly actually loves it.
Got the costume hidden away somewhere.
Okay, well let's move on then. The other bit of news today that I wanted to touch on is this announcement that Scotland A are going to play Chile, which. On the one hand, the fact we're playing Chile is a good thing. It's great to go and play it, but I don't get why it's an A fixture. Because they go, but I can understand if it's an A fixture whilst there's a main fixture going on, like within a couple of days, you can say, okay, it's clearly a B team. But if it's the touring squad, right? They're taking a tour squad out to Argentina. It's the same squad.
Yeah.
So why make it an A fixture?
Kind of disrespecting Chile, to be honest, because you're right, they're either taking like 50 plus bodies and they're taking a full A team, or it's going to be more or less the same team that's about to play three tests against Argentina, and they've just decided that Chile aren't worthy of a full cap, which seems
insulting to Chile, given Chile have qualified for the World Cup.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know, it's a bit funny.
Big emerging nation, so yeah, it's a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, that's my feeling anyway. I could be totally wrong. Maybe they are going to take a whole other squad. I don't know.
It seems a bit. Can you imagine that all the things the SRU are you going to pay for? It's like going have another few seats on a plane. Right, on you go. We're going to charter another flight just to go and play Chile. For you lads aren't getting caps. We can't afford the caps. We can
the thing
to
is, like,
another plane.
And who are they going to take? Because I assume that they're giving most of the senior players a summer off. So if they are genuinely going to take an A squad that's not the senior squad, who's going to be in it? Because most of who would be in an A squad is going to be in the senior squad this summer.
The only thing I can think is they're taking a younger squad and they're going to throw a few lads on the plane as like for the inverted commas experience that wouldn't normally get, that wouldn't, probably another season away from a cap, or maybe looking to cap them post-World Cup to give them experience of being around the camp and might throw them on the bench. But even so, just give them a cap.
Yeah.
Because they're still tied. They're still tying them to Scotland because it's a designated A team.
Yeah.
It just seems really odd. Just
maybe
really
maybe the odd. Second flight for the A-team is just coming directly from South Africa.
Yeah.
That's the plan. they're not taking two flights from Scotland. They're taking one flight from Scotland and one from Cape Town of everyone who's got a Scottish granny.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. I don't get it. I don't understand it. The last time, I think the last time Scotland A played was against the England Saxons.
Yeah. Did the one in 2020 ever happen? Remember there was supposed to be one at Welford Road?
It never happened.
Scotland A against never Saxons. Happened, it got canned, didn't it?
It was last year.
I thought it was two years ago. I remember it being a COVID thing.
It was summer testing. Scotland's whole summer tour got cancelled. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's bizarre. Mad that it's just make it full at national. I think that's the general consensus. Agreed. Motion passed. shall we talk about Scotland women then? And I don't know.
I feel bad about doing it. I just see your face there.
Oh, your face.
No. I don't know what. How do I do? Do we want to review? Should we talk about the Ireland game? Or it's probably just worth talking about in the context of how the whole tournament has gone.
Yeah. For Scotland. I mean, for the Ireland game, we could basically rinse and repeat what we said last week about the Italy game. Take out the bit where I tried to put the blame on someone that wasn't even playing and leave the rest. Because it was, I mean, it was fairly similar. Slightly more heartbreaking.
Yeah, and, you know, we seem to be able to build the pressure, and the pressure, we've got the ability and the momentum, and we've got the players to build the pressure, and we then just don't seem to have the ruthlessness in the red zone or in the 22. And I find it, and then, you know, and I'm going to say it again, but it comes down to those small percentages. Mm-hmm. And the last try comes from a small percentage of basically, you know, we had that game won, and then, you know, tired bodies, people who are doing far more than they really should do in their life if they're a professional athlete. And it just gets to the end of a long, long Six Nations, as well as doing their jobs and also being Scottish internationals. And it just, I could, you know, you can see it happening. And it, and I saw it happening, and I was watching it thinking they're going to score here. And it's just, everything just seems to keep, you know, it's not the silver bullet. It's not going to give us all the answers, but the whole professionalism side of things and paying them to do one job will help sort these small, those 10% differences that will sort those things out.
Because I was watching, I was thinking, at times there was the difference for me, and I think, again, this is across the whole tournament, is Scotland's attack plan is fairly forward-driven and can be a little bit one-dimensional, of just hit it up. And, you know, pass the backs and occasionally might get to the wings. You know, there's a couple of crossfield kicks this week that nearly came off. But when you look at some of the stuff that Ireland did when they broke free, there were set plays to stretch and penetrate through the Scottish defence. And I don't see Scotland doing that. You have moments where you got, like, you know, someone, you know, Chloe Rowley or the likes kind of bursting through and stepping and it's exciting. But it's not, that's not coming off. That's them exploiting broken play rather than creating gaps. Yeah. But I can't be too critical about that, because someone needs to spend time coming up with that, and then players need time to be walked through it and to spend time analysing the opposition to then work out where the gaps are. And that all, and then we end up circling back to, well, the only way you're going to ever do that and be able to do that and to get a more structured game plan with and analyze the opposition as if you pay not just the players, but you pay coaches and you invest in not just a head coach and a couple of people helping out part time, but a full time coaching staff.
On the flip side of that, Ireland are also not professional, and that's their second choice backline. Because their main Six Nations backline is all the way with the sevens just now. So that's their second choice backline, and they were able to do it. But then they've obviously put a lot more focus on that than Scotland have.
I think also you have to, it's a mixture. You also have to remember that Ireland have been a dominant force in women's rugby for some time, whereas Scotland have had women's rugby for a long time, but they haven't been as dominant forces as Ireland have been in the past. But yeah, absolutely, my argument of paying them will solve this problem does fall down when we come across Italy and we come across Ireland, who are both just about semi-professional. Yeah. You know?
But the bottom line is, I think the point there is, it doesn't, the argument doesn't fall apart because, you know, well, we lost to Ireland by a point, lost to Italy by a score. The really fine margin. I mean, you lost to Wales by a fine margin as well. So at the moment, we are, Scotland are competitive with those three nations. You know, you're looking at the bounce of a ball, the, you know, a pass landing hands, and those results are different. So then the worry is, and the argument should be, unless you invest, and not just trying to match, it's not about trying to keep up with Wales and Ireland, but unless you invest properly, forget about Wales now, what Wales and Italy are doing, invest properly like England are doing, like France are doing. Unless you invest properly, then we're going to be left behind.
And, you know, it's the Scotland team has improved significantly. And they are all doing a very, very good job. There's a lot of things that can change, and there's a lot of things that I'm sure they'll review, you know, they'll go to the review and have a look over and say, well, we could have done better here, we could have done better there. And there's a lot of things I could probably sit and say, well, I would have changed that. But I'm not, you know, we are competitive. We have been, unfortunately, on the wrong side of the competitive matches. But what I would like to say to a lot of the naysayers who stand back and say, well, you know, they need to start getting the crowds in first before they start paying professional wages. If you look at, for example, England are on a crest of a wave now, and that's where they're getting their crowds. They're getting their 20,000s at Welford Road or at Bristol or was it Gloucester?
Yeah.
Gloucester.
And they're getting those, you know, when they were fully professional and they were doing quite well in the past, they were getting friends and family, and that was it. I was listening to an interview with Emily Scarrett, you know, earlier on this week, and she described the same thing. She was fully professional, but they were only getting, you know, friends and family at a game. You know, it was very, there wasn't a lot of people in the grandstand. So it kind of blows that whole argument out of the water that you know, they have to be, you have to put the business case first before you actually get the job. You know, you need to invest in these players. You need to invest in our Scotland international side, and you will then start to pack out your stadiums, and you'll start to bring in, you know, bigger sponsors, bigger audiences. And we are so behind the curve now that we, you know, and I don't really care about what Wales are doing, what Ireland are doing, what Italy are doing. We should be taking it on ourselves and saying we want to be better. We want to invest in this group because it is so skewed to the men's game, you know?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you look at 2-3 years ago, we turn up to the Women's Six Nations and be thinking, all right, we're going to get spanked by France and England. Wales, you know, you will probably lose to Ireland. I mean, there's a few years ago when, you know, it felt like they turned a huge corner when they beat Ireland. But it's almost really Ireland have dropped down to Scotland's level more than anything. And then Wales, and, you know, even a few years ago, Italy would give Scotland a really good doing because Italy were a better team and Scotland were. So the improvements there, I don't think you can say that, oh, well, then you can't. It's kind of chicken and egg a little bit, but you kind of have to invest in order to get people through the door to watch a good brand, watch something that's entertaining. Yeah, you can't just expect people to turn up to a rugby game and watch, you know, amateur rugby. That's not, people want to come and see something. I mean, and this is a very special team that plays an excellent brand of rugby, but there's a point at which there's a limit to where they can go whilst it's at the level of funding it is now.
Yeah.
And that's going to limit the audience for it. But you give, because even if you pay the players, it's not just paying them to go to training, right? I mean, you think about Edinburgh and Glasgow players, they go to schools, they go to training camps, they go and do all this other stuff, they do the work in the community. So that grows the game as well.
Yeah.
And if they're able, they're not, you know, women players, if they're paid to do that, do their, and that's part of their job, as well as training, you're not asking them to give up time to go and spend an afternoon in school with some girls trying to teach them how to play rugby or run a session. It's part and parcel of what the men do, so it would also be part and parcel of what the women do. And it's, I think the bottom line here isn't it? And it was interesting, Rocky Clark, the England player, was tweeting, you know, tweeted the Rob Robertson article this week, just basically saying you need to pay these women, because there might come a point where if Wales and Italy take off, for example, although I don't think their investment's that significant from their unions, but that takes off and all of a sudden Scotland are left behind, then there'll be the same cause I'll get Spain in, you know, get a better team.
Ireland should be a big, big warning sign for Scotland because, you know, like you say, a few years ago, they were a dominant force when women's rugby was kind of coming to the forefront. Beating them was a huge deal for us. Now, they've spent, 18 months, 2 years, basically an all-out war with their union. And Cammy, you're absolutely bang on. It's not that Scotland have got better, but at the same time as Scotland being getting better, Ireland's star has started to fall. And part of that is because they have so much off-field stuff, so many arguments, they can't get the union on side. And so the Scotland players are only going to put up with this for so long. And then we're in every danger of ending up in that exact same position.
Well, how do we attract new players? Okay, fair enough. You know, we've got the youth system working quite well within Scotland women, but you know, to talk about maybe the men's game. If you're wanting to try and bring people through, like for example, I've forgotten this come half's name, but the lassie that came from Worcester. How do you attract those players to say, look, you know, rather than going and playing for England or going playing for, you know, those youth players that have the opportunity to play for a couple of different sides, how do you attract them to Scotland rather than going to England? There's no way you can attract them to go.
No, there's not. That way. Essentially, all you do is, you know, and this is something I think Scotland men struggled with in the past, is when Scotland men weren't competitive, then you would have players who would, I mean, Ben Vellacott's probably an example of that, right? Ben Vellacott's been touted as a potential nine for Scotland for years. And early on in his career, he said, he was holding out for an England spot.
Yeah.
And quite rightly, because at the time he was first touted, Scotland were rubbish.
Yeah.
So why would he come and play for Scotland? Why would he kind of throw all that in and jeopardize? Because it jeopardized his career, professional career down in England, because it limits your opportunities for clubs. So it's the same situation now. I think if you've got someone like Katie Matteson who played for England in the past and might have had a choice between that and Scotland, I forget the name, wasn't there two sisters, one played for Scotland, one played for England a few years ago as well?
Oh yeah, because they were on the Guinness advert, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the name was though.
You know, and the same that if you had the option, if England were to come calling, then you know that it's, unless you're, you know, dyed in the wool, kind of face painted blue, screaming freedom down the street, then it's a no-brainer. You'd always go for England at this point. So what, it's a bit like with the crowds. Scotland have to get better, and the only way they're going to get better is with investment. But the investment, I think, is not just in the clubs and in the pathways in Scotland. They also need a good exiles program as well, because that's worked very well for the men. You think of the men that have come through the Exiles program, like Ali Price come through the Exiles program, Hamish Watson's come through the Exiles program. And I think that's a way to persuade players who have, you know, can play for multiple nations to come on board, because you can have those conversations early on, and there is the, you know, and you can capture someone like Hamish Watson, who apparently had, you know, Scotland players posted on his bedroom wall at a young age, and kind of keep in touch and how are you getting on? Oh, we're still interested. You know, do you want to come along at this session? Do you want to come up to Edinburgh for a bit and you know, run a few games? That's what they're going to have to do for the women's game, because to do it for the men's is run an Exiles program as well.
The thing is, though, you cannot do that if your pitch is, how would you feel about playing for Scotland? Oh, by the way, you'll also have to get a job.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's a non-starter.
Yeah. What do you fancy doing for a job?
Yeah. Unless the answer is playing for Scotland, then nobody's going to say yes to that. Yeah.
We'll give you 5p a mile travel expenses.
We could hook you up with a sales job at Peter Vardy.
You can have up to £6 for your lunch, £12 for your evening meal.
It's just, as I say, I think it's a build of everything. We want them, you know, we're looking at the games throughout the Six Nations. We're looking at if we had between 5 and 10%, if we'd added 5 or 10% to our gameplay or defence or whatever you want to say, we would have had those three games won. Mm-hmm. And we'd be sitting in a different place.
And also, I think the games against France and England, I'm not saying we would win them, but that Scotland were competitive in both those games.
Yeah.
So the gap then closes. And even if you're still getting beat, you're getting beat by smaller margins. And for France, in a way, France, and that's what France and England want. They want to play against more competitive sides. They want to be given a proper test. Yeah. They don't want to turn up and stick 50
points. And we also want to be in a situation where we go to the World Cup and we qualify for next year's World Cup by where we finish. And that's not going to happen overnight, and that's not going to happen. You know, if we turn around next week and sorry, you say we're funding each player at £30,000 a year. That's not overnight going to give us the Rugby World Cup qualification that we need. When we go to the World Cup, you know, we're going to end up, it's going to take a lot of work, but it's going to ease the journey and it's going to give you that extra 5-10%, you know.
Yeah. And I think, again, the disappointing thing is we've heard nothing. There's been no announcements. The tournament's finished and it started with such a big bang, and it kind of feels like it's kind of whimpered out, gone out with a bit of a whimper for Scotland. And in general, I think the kind of buzz around it that was at the start kind of faded away a little bit.
I think having two away games back to back at the end probably didn't help that.
Yeah.
And that's not really something we can do anything about.
No, it's not. But, Teo, I was kind of hoping, and I kind of thought, do you know what? Give the SRU its dues Monday morning or Tuesday, because it's a bank holiday. Look, there'll be a press release saying, following the Six Nations, we're going to fund. We're looking at setting up a pro team. We're going to fund the women's game, or some kind of big announcement. But there's been just absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And still, the only reason we know that they're being funded to some level is because somebody asked Brian Easton a question and he's given them an answer, and little bits that leak out from the players. There's been no big grand statement from the SRU about what they intend to do. And the only reason we know they may be considering joining the URC is because the URC have made a statement saying, We think there's some interest among the unions. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely nothing at all.
But on a positive side, what I would like to say is that we've seen some new talent coming through. Mm-hmm. You know, Molly Wright and Christine Belisle and Evie Gallagher. And then, you know, we've even seen, you know, for example, Emma Orr. You know, coming through, Shona Campbell, these players are coming through and looking incredibly sharp. And they're almost a new generation as such of Scotland women players, who will come along and give us, you know, we'll be at two or three World Cups, hopefully. And it's exciting on that side of things. So I have to try and end this conversation part in a bit of a positive.
Yeah, and let's say, like, when's the last time you've seen a team be within one bounce or one pass, like you say, of three results and losing all three of them? Like, it's not as bad as it looks when you look at the table, because that is, That's three games that could have gone either way, and it just so happens that this time all three of them didn't go our way. And I don't think that happens very often at all, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, Craig, the fact that the players that stepped in were able to step in without a drop in quality says something, because they're not, you know, not all of these players are playing in the Premier 15s.
Yeah.
You know, so to come in and step up to international level and hit the ground running and there not be a drop in quality is positive for the future. But like I said, there's a limit on how long that can be sustained. But I think the fact the under-18s, you know, they had the under-18 festival, and again, there was a good result for the women against the girls against Italy, and there's plenty coming through. But do you know what I mean? What like you said, what's the incentive?
And that's, again, yes, and I think a lot of those players want to play to the, you know, and this is where Scotland. God, I'm getting a bit confused here. I'm not confused, but I'm yapping away. But for me, the big thing with Scotland is that you've got a team there that want to play for the jersey, and they'll do everything they possibly can for the jersey. Now what we need to start doing is building a team that want to play for the jersey, but also can focus 100% on playing for the jersey, rather than having their focus taken in different ways.
Yeah. Because there's no doubt. I mean, they've said they want. You know, they hold themselves to professional standards, and absolutely, you know, that's the best way to be, and that's absolutely what they should be doing. But we can't. I think it's great they hold themselves to professional standards, but I don't think it's fair for us to hold them to professional standards, because for every fault that you find with the game, you can tie it back to, well, they've only got so much time. They've only got so much, you know, they can give. There's so much conditioning you can do. So it's just, and we go around in a circle, which we'll continue to do until they're paid.
Absolutely.
And even then, we'll still gripe about it because they won't be paid enough. Anything else on Scotland Women?
Nothing for me.
No.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Do you both want to talk about the URC from this weekend?
Once again, you could just clip what I said about Glasgow last weekend. It was the down to, once again, me tweeting at the start of the game how impressed I was with the physicality of the forwards. We got a penalty try off the back of a maul against the Bulls and turned that into a penalty try and a yellow card, by the way, because our maul had them on skates three or four times, and then somehow turned that into a 30-point loss again, like we did last weekend.
Yeah, I think that probably sums it up. It's not... Yeah. It's the same old with Glasgow, isn't it? And now you've lost Carrick
almost to the letter. Like, you could have been watching either game last week or this week. It was basically exactly the same.
Yeah.
To the point of, you've infected us with giving away penalties as well now.
It's catching.
Catching.
I was going to say, if Glasgow weren't in South Africa, I would have said there might have been a midweek Scotland cut impromptu catch up.
Yeah. They've obviously been FaceTiming each other and telling them how to give away penalties. I don't know. I think that's you know, Edinburgh continued on from their Zebre game of just had a few issues. They marched themselves all the way down the pitch and gave a try at Ulster with penalty, giving away penalties in the line out, you know. And they've done this before. And what annoyed me then and annoyed me now is that they got told, you're coming in too early, don't come in too early, don't throw the man across the gap. And what do they do the next line out? Do exactly the same thing. And they're looking at the ref as if it's the ref's fault. And it's like, you know, come on, guys. You know, everybody knows you play the referee. I don't care. You know, okay, fair enough. I don't think the ref had a particularly good game. But you play the referee. We're always told that when we're in the mini section, we're told you play the referee. It was back to the old Edinburgh for a little while. And then, again, a few little decisions to that instead of passing to the right, pass to the left, and you run into players rather than an open field. So we
I suppose though, and I mean this is slightly different from between Glasgow and Edinburgh. For Glasgow, it feels like they've been kind of repeatedly smashing themselves in the face with the mistakes and never learning to put down the baseball bat and stop smashing themselves in the face. Whereas with Edinburgh, I think they've had a couple of rough games over the last two games, Craig, and in a way, like, you never want to lose or to have these or struggle to get past the likes of Zebra. But it's not come at a bad time in the season for those issues to be addressed rather than kind of slowly, that kind of slow drip creep that you might get over, you know, the game against Wasps, and then it kicks into the, you know, the knockout rounds of the pro, what are we on, the URC as it is now.
Yeah.
So it's, in a way, is it not better that it's happened now on the kind of precipice of what are going to be some very key games for Edinburgh?
Yeah,
rather than it happening kind of in the last stages of the URC or Europe.
Yeah, yes, but I hope it's not the start of a rot, if you know what I mean. I think Edinburgh just went a little bit to sleep. I think they just, you know, they broke down Ulster's defence in the first half and just made a couple of passes just either didn't go to hand or weren't made the right way. Because we would have been two tries up. And then Ulster put a lot of pressure on us. And we kind of gave in to them that way. And then at the end, we were so close, but we went back to the old Edinburgh of let's try and knock the door down with strength rather than with our heads. And because there was, you know, I think if I'm right in saying, Buffelli was out, there was lots, you know, was out on the far side screaming for the ball in the last few seconds of the match, and they kept trying to use the forwards to batter the door down, and they needed to get the ball out to the backs because there was lots of space, and it didn't happen. Now whether that was Blair Kinghorn's fault for not getting Burgos to get the ball out, or was it Burgos that the forwards weren't listened to, it was difficult, but then they ended up knocking it on, and that was that, you know.
Yeah.
I think Edinburgh probably weren't helped by the fact that the positions were all more or less decided by the time their game started.
Do you think it's like like you used to get in the crowds of the football where someone's on a transistor radio shouting down the results to the sidelines?
Doesn't matter, lads.
Doesn't matter, lads.
It still does kind of matter, but...
Well, we're also running injured as well. We've got a fair few players, you know, that are injured now, and you know, that's Immelman and Moyano not going to be able to finish the season with us. And Dave Cherry, the current Mrs. Manson was very distraught to see Dave Cherry upset and struggling with his arm. And, you know, he said on the podcast, I think it was on one of the podcasts, he said he thought he'd broken it. And then just, we strapped it up and continued to play. And he was meant to hang around in the wing and not get the ball, just be there and try and help out as much as he could. And then all of a sudden they kept giving him the ball. And he was like, I don't want the ball. So it was an interesting. So we'll see how it goes. You know, as I say, I think we're looking forward to Wasps. It'll be quite an interesting weekend. And then,
you're down to Adam McBurney, I think, at this stage. There's no news on whether Dave Cherry and McAnally will play. I think Mike Blair said that McAnally is very unlikely.
Yeah.
He said, with Dave, you never know. I just think that sums up Dave Cherry.
that means that McBurnley's starting and Dave Cherry's going to be on the bench probably.
Yeah.
And don't pass him the ball when he comes on.
Johnny, you've Glasgow now have no back row.
Yep. Which is interesting considering what a position of strength and depth back row has been for Glasgow at some points of the season. Now we're a bit like, oh, where have they all gone? Because we've lost Matt Fagerson, obviously, long term. We're losing a lot of starters around him. I think Tom Gordon got a bad one. We're going to be struggling, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because back row has been a real bright spot for Glasgow as well.
Yeah, and you've got Leon. I don't think, to be fair to Glasgow, the way Glasgow will be playing at the minute, I don't think the lack of back row is going to be the main reason you're going to be struggling.
No. Now, we've certainly got a tougher game this weekend. And as far as the URC goes, I think, to be honest, if I was to be realistic for the best chances for Scotland, it depends what happens with the other games, because whoever loses the 1872 goes to Leinster and we can basically write that off. Whoever wins, if Munster stay second, will go to Munster, and I'd rather that was Glasgow. If Munster lose a game and the Sharks go to second, then whoever wins the 1872 goes down to Durban, and I'd rather that was Edinburgh. So I think I'd like to kind of wait and see who the second place team is before we decide who's got a better chance of who we want to win the 1872, basically. Who's got a better chance of getting through the quarters?
That's the thing, and that's because it doesn't, although neither team have a home quarter now, there is still that element of, well, it's playing to see to get the easier side of the draw, I guess. But there's never going to be an easy side of the draw, so does it actually matter that much, Greg?
Edinburgh will go down to South Africa, no problem. We've been there and done that. we'll see.
I think your chances a lot more. I like, if Glasgow go back to South Africa, it's a waste of time. But then again, I'd fancy Glasgow at Tolman Park against Munster more than I'd fancy Edinburgh there. Because we've got form against Munster.
Yeah, we've got a lot of history against Munster, and when I say that, we've been handed our arse regularly by Munster. And our quarter final, you know, we've got that quarter final to get back from Munster. When we're in the European Cup, and they quietly put us out. Was it the European Cup? And they played us at Murrayfield.
Yeah.
That's when Schumann got put off the park.
Yeah, he got yellow carded because who was diving? Somebody was diving.
No, he got yellow carded because he did obstruction.
Did he not trip somebody up?
Yeah, he moved over and one of the Munster players dived on the ground. Funnily enough, an Irish player diving the ground, never. So it'll be interesting to see where we are with that. But the problem I have, and this is always my concern when it comes to when Glasgow start building up this sort of losing mentality that they seem to have on certain games, we come to the 1872 and they bloody well beat us, you know. And that's my concern, and especially the fact that we haven't really got a home game. It's not a home game at Murrayfield.
Hamish Watson says it. He says the Edinburgh players would much rather be, you know, they understand commercially why the SIU are doing it, but
yeah,
the Edinburgh players would rather play at the Dam. And I do get the point.
Glasgow fans get to go if it's at the Dam.
Commercially, if with the other 1872 Cup game for Glasgow against Glasgow, why didn't they play that in Murrayfield and then get a big, massive crowd for that as well? Why? That's my issue with it all, because it's a neutral venue. All the players have played at Murrayfield. It's not,
The only thing that makes it not neutral is the kickoff time, which means that the only people that can get there live within an easy drive of Edinburgh. Because you'll get a train back to Glasgow at that time of night.
Aye, well, but they could change that. I don't have a problem with changing the kickoff time. The problem I have is the fact that, you know, Glasgow get to have their, a large amount of their fans at their home ground, and get to shout in their megaphones to try and reach the players, because there's a huge gap between where they sit and then the actual pitch itself. But they get to have their Scotstoun adventure, and we don't. And we're building, you know, I would expect, hopefully, next season you'll see an 1872 Cup. Either both legs will be played in Murrayfield, or we'll have it at the Dam, because I think the Dam
I think it's because traditionally this end of May one was the 3rd, 1872.
Yeah.
And it was the day that we had all the club finals and stuff beforehand.
Yeah.
It is a bit different this year where there's only two legs.
Yeah. I think the problem when they did it on the day of the club finals, I was all for that and thought it was great, but then there was a lot of tales of it being quite fighty because basically people went long and got drunk all day watching lots of rugby, and then there was the 1872 Cup at the end of it.
Yeah, you have to watch out for Johnny. Johnny, when people when he goes down to these things and people bring into the bring Hugh Jones into the conversation, he gets a little bit punchy.
Well, just why would you be? Why would you be mean about Hugh Jones? Like, you're just making Craig bad decisions to begin with.
Craig Charmer says he's the Scotland's first choice 15 now.
I saw that. Just Craig Charmer knows everyone, doesn't he?
In the summer, he probably has a shout. To be honest, he's had a really good season, and he's played a lot of 15 for Quins. And Stuart Hogg is not going to America. So he's got a shot of being the first choice 15.
What happened to this whole? Oh, actually, Blair Kinghorn should be at 15 instead of 10. But now
because you agree so much about Blair Kinghorn at 10 that I'm just fed up of. Like, fine, if you want him at 10, have him at 10. I'm sick of arguing about it now.
Because you're proven wrong. That's what it is. You sit there in your wrongness and just be wrong, okay?
I mean, in a perfect world, it would be Ross Thompson at 10 and Hugh Jones at 15, if it was up to me.
What, Ross Thompson, who keeps getting the shepherd's hook every so often? It's time for you to go, Ross.
That's it. We're up. I mean,
that would purely be to wind you up.
Right. Let's throw a donkey wheel on and lose this match.
Yeah.
Ross Thompson's not getting hooked when we're behind, is he? He's getting hooked because his job's finished and there's only one man in the world that can transform that into a loss, and that's Duncan Weir.
The one thing that's interesting is Danny Wilson's kind of constantly talked about, oh, the signing's coming, news of signing's coming. And then there was a big kind of thing for Glasgow, oh, we've got news of signing's coming, and they're all academy players.
Yeah, four academy from the Super Six.
Yeah. So, yeah. Thanks, Danny.
Yeah, they look big boys though. One thing I'll say. It'll be interesting to see how they go. They look big lads, so it'll be interesting to see. And we had a sign in this week as well. Damien Hoyland is staying, and his coffee stand will be staying as well.
I was going to say he was never going to go anywhere because
he's paid a lease on that coffee stand.
I know. Probably half the coaching staff are probably two stamps away from a free coffee.
You can't get rid of him now. I'm two stamps away from a free cappuccino. He has to stay. Actually, he's a different player. I've got to say, since we used to be kind of middle of the road, but I'm really enjoying seeing him play. So ever since he got the crystal tips. He got the blonde hair, I think he's come on. No, I think he's doing quite well.
He's channeling Sean Lamont.
Yeah, he just needs a pair of gloves now and then he'll be sorted.
I think the thing is with Damien Hoyland is you keep, like, for years I've been thinking, oh, he's really going to kick on this season. And then he's one of these players, and I can see Stafford McDowell going this way as well, a little bit, Johnny. It's like you kind of keep going, this year's his year, this year's his year. Oh, he's got so much about him. And then you turn around, you're like, he's 28.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just to me, with Damien Hoyland's exactly like that. You're like going, oh, Damien Hoyland, he played a bit for Melrose. He's kind of done his service in the sevens and he was good on the 20s play. And then you go, Christ, he's 28 now. Where did that time go?
And the tape manufacturers want him to stay as well because he usually walks out and he's got his arm and his legs and everything else taped up.
Well, I think that's it because he's been unlucky with injuries, right? He's never had a chance. Well, I think until recently, he's not really had a chance to get a good run of games. So, find any kind of consistent form because he's always then had some horrendous injury.
But he is one of those players though that he's not a, what's the word? He's a Darcy type player in that, when he gets the ball, he's no feared. And he ends up in pieces at the bottom of a ruck on a regular basis because he just goes for the space. And if he's not one of those players like Hogg who'll run down a blind alley and then start dancing about because he doesn't want to go into contact. He'll rattle into contact if he wants to,
Yeah. Good. Anything more on Glasgow and Edinburgh? I think we've caught up with all the news.
No.
Dad, did you catch any of the Super Six?
Yes.
I did not this weekend. How did you manage to watch it? Between the sevens all day on Saturday, your final on Sunday, and the women and Edinburgh, where do you find your time?
It's because he hasn't got young kids.
That's what it is.
I've not got young kids, and I have been in a hotel for the last couple of nights. So they do a really good service now that you can actually watch highlights and you can watch games on YouTube, Johnny. It's quite interesting. You should have a look.
Pick of the six, then, Craig and Johnny. You can just chip in of anything you've seen. For me, one of the big pick of the sixes was I'm still not sure about the sprint series, if I'm honest, and the weather toll, but I really enjoyed the summer rugby last year. And there were a couple of games this weekend I thought, the air game was fine and it was a good game, but it's wet rugby. And I know there's some that enjoy wet, slippy rugby, but I don't know. I think it kind of... it ruined the brand a little bit for me this weekend.
I think we're seeing that in results as well. The results aren't as close as they have been.
Yeah.
When it's dry.
Last season, you're getting 52-37 and daft scores like that, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's because everyone could play running rugby and chuck the ball about.
Once you start shoving the ball up the jumper and going down route one, you start losing the big scores and you start losing the playing rugby, But it's quite interesting how my Southern Knights have really fallen off an edge, They don't look the team that they were last season. In the sprint series,
it's the defence, and I know none of the teams last year. We talked about this last year. None of the teams really seemed to be that bothered about defence, but I think Southern Knights were a harder team.
Yeah,
they were one of the better teams in the defence, and that. I mean, the first Stirling try was just so soft. I mean, the passing. I can't fault the passing at all. It was excellent. It was flat. It was quick, but it was basically a 2-on-5.
Yeah,
right. It's like two Stirling players running at five Southern Knights players, and not one player attempted a tackle. They all came up in defence, and then all of a sudden found they had to turn on the heels and chase the players.
If I was a Super Six player, and I came up against Stirling County with Walter Fafita and Ratu Tangave on the wings at the same time, I wouldn't be bothering with attempting a tackle either.
But the thing is, it wasn't them.
No, it wasn't them either.
It was just, the Southern Knights don't look the same team as they were last season at all.
No.
And it's such a shame.
It really is, because they were, they got to a final and they could have won the final, whether I'm feeling a romantic mood or not, but if you look at the game on Friday night, it was a beautiful night. The green yards looked well. Well, the grass is plastic, so I suppose it must look well. But, it's a Friday night lights game. It's something you want expansive rugby. You want a good game of rugby. And it just, the Southern Knights have really just dropped off a cliff.
Is it just me, or are there a lot more actual Edinburgh and Glasgow players in this sprint series than there was in last year's Super Six?
Yeah.
It feels like there's a lot more.
Harriets were packed. With Edinburgh players this weekend.
Murphy Walker playing for Ayr this weekend. And he's literally off the back of three or four games in a row for Glasgow. And, Fafita's playing, Tangivy's playing.
I think
it's
this
a
is
lot.
Yeah, and I think this is what I don't get. And I wish we knew, what's the difference between the sprint series and the actual Super Six? Because if this is just... We're going to stick some of the pro players down and just throw the ball about and get everyone warmed up for the proper tournament. Then I'm fine with it. But it doesn't really feel like any. It's like I just don't get the point of it, because I don't know if any of these players are then going to go and play in the main tournament. We don't know if, it's just some. How are the players getting distributed? Because that was always a problem in the Premiership. And you get, you know, the likes of John Hardy turning up for Hoik as he returned from injury. So, you know,
well, it used
to be a draft, didn't it?
Yeah, it used to be a draft with the Premiership, and you know, certain players would be, and that's why, for example, Duhan van der Merwe has been pictured with a hairiest jumper on, because he's in his draft, Harriet, you know, him and I think Murray McCallum was at Harriet's as well, and that's what worries me, because then you've got the players, you've got the teams like Boroughmuir, and you've got the Southern Knights that haven't got the sprinkling of the they've got ex professional players, but they haven't got the current professional players coming through. You know?
Yeah, and they've got a couple of academy players and good academy prospects, but yeah, it's not the same as we haven't got Walter Fifita.
Yeah.
I mean, Walter Fifita's got no business being in a Stirling County side.
No. And like, and realistically, he is still a Samoan international, Tongan international. And Glasgow are not paying him the money that you pay an international, even if they are a tier two international, to spend his time playing for Stirling County.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to think when it kicks into the Super Six proper that Glasgow are going to want him back.
Well, yeah, because I would suggest it's not fair. Because how much, you know, what's, I mean, he didn't play, I don't think, I'm just checking the Stirling County thing. I didn't think he was there this weekend, but.
No, he didn't play this weekend. Yeah, the first two, I think.
Yeah. Again, you know what? What if Fifita's not going to be on small money?
No.
So, yeah.
And I know Tangev is away and he's maybe on the naughty step and he's been sent down to Stirling for that. But that's another international that you're talking about from the Glasgow squad. And from the Glasgow squad proper as well. We're not talking about them rotating in academy boys or anything. That's like starters from our European squad.
Yeah.
There's also been another big changing off the guard as well within the Super Six Sprint Series, and that is that Watsonians have taken over from Stirling County from having the most howfing kit I've ever seen in my entire life. Because it doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a Watsonians kit or does it want to be covered in sponsors? It's howfing.
It looks. Do you know what it looks like? It looks like a rugby league top. I know it sounds incredibly snobby of me, but it looks like a league top.
It does.
It's even right down to the triangle on the front, the white triangle on the front.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
I won't hear anything bad said about County's kit this year either, because the, like I said before it started, their kit is beautiful. They haven't sent me any yet, but it is really nice.
Well, you did try your best to rub yourself up against one of the Stirling County players when they were at the House Evans. They came dressed in full Super Six kit.
Yep. I wasn't going to hang them out for that, but you are, so that's fine. Yeah, one of the boys in Stirling County's squad at the House Evans this weekend had a full set of Super Six stash on.
Like, why? Where you come from? You come from the game.
Either it's one of their Super Six players, in which case disguise yourself a bit better. Or
because everyone's flocking. All the kids are over going, Dad, I've seen a Super Six player. Where's my autograph?
No, but if I was playing in one of the other Sevens teams, I'd be like, what's he doing here?
Yeah, true.
Like, or it's just someone who really likes their Super Six team and bought a full set of his dash. I don't know.
Well, they did go home, so they didn't win it. So maybe he wasn't a Super Six player.
Yeah. Anything else for the Super Six for you? I thought like refereeing was good again. I always enjoy a bit of
Yeah, refereeing was great. What was it? There was that one where... Was it the Bulls game when the player went over the line, they kicked the ball through, and he's having this. He's saying it was dabbed down. He says, I saw it perfectly well, and it was dabbed on the line, which means it's out. Away you go.
On you go. I know.
Yeah. So no, it was very good. There was some good comments from the referees on the mics. Listening to the games.
There's just absolutely no, it's just straight that there's no BS from any of the Super Six referees. It's just straight on. Like even the yellow card, was it the Boroughmuir game with the yellow card and they're all appealing for a red and not yellow.
Yeah.
No discussion, no debate, just nope, it's yellow. Let's get on with the game.
I think he's. What was his words? I've made the decision now anyway, so it was a split second decision. I've made the decision, so it's a yellow. That's the way it is.
And then, you know, even in the, you know, like the Southern Nice game, Rory Campbell, formerly of this podcast, doing a wonderful refereeing job. You know, just straight away, players taken in the air. He's landed on his neck. Red card.
Yeah.
Didn't even consult with the touch. You know, the touch judge, the assistant referee. It's just like, ah, that's a red.
Yeah.
We've seen like, you know, similar things in a international match. Have to almost like have a dissertation written by the TMO before anyone's ready to write it, you know, make a decision.
Unless you're Ben Whitehouse, who, I'm not listening to anyone else. So I'm going to tell you all about me and look at me and I'm fantastic. Anyway, that's a different story.
Before we go, Anna, friend of the podcast, says, Craig, your impression of Johnny is perfect. So anyway, that's it for the main podcast this week. Thank you everyone for joining us. If you're a Patreon, hang about. We'll be doing our Patreon only section of the podcast in a moment, but for the moment it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Johnny and Craig.
Bye.